What's up, everybody? Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. This is Will Pruitt, and today I'm joined by Ryan Kester, ProWrestling.net staff member and all-around cool guy. How are you this morning, Ryan?
I'm doing pretty good, Will. How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, it's a nice, chilly day here, and chilly in Southern California means it's only going to get up to, like, 60. But to me, that's an excuse to break out the winter coat. So I'm pretty psyched about breaking out the winter coat. It's a nice coat.
We're rocking 27 degrees here.
Oh, man. That's that is a lot colder than 50.
I will show you a winter coat.
I mean, I'm sure I could layer some stuff under my winter coat and all of that. But yeah, I definitely... believe it or not, I've actually felt chilly in the last week with how, well, not cold, but cold it's been by Southern California standards. We're wimps, basically. We're wimps here.
Good old California cold.
Yeah. So it's the All Access Podcast, so, you know, gotta kick things off with the pluggy plugs. Guys, go to ProWrestling.net. You know, it's a pretty cool website. I'm guessing you've already been there if you're listening to this. If you just subscribe to the podcast to hear my awesomeness, go to ProWrestling.net because there's a lot more awesomeness there, including, guys, if maybe you're tired of some ads, if maybe you're tired of not having enough wrestling audio content to fill your week, check out the .net membership side of things. You get an ad-free version of the site, which is sweet. That's I talk to so many people. One of their main motivations for signing up is like, yeah, I don't deal with ads anymore. It's great. You get an ad-free version of the site, access to the new and improved .NET members forum with a really cool group of guys, including myself and Ryan. I mean, if you've ever thought about just sitting around shooting the poop and watching wrestling with us, there's your chance right there. You get access to .NET member audio, which this is a weekly audio for .NET members, most of the time with just me, sometimes with Jake Barnett, sometimes with Ryan Kester, sometimes Jason Powell fills in because I'm lazy. But we, you know... you get your impact audio. You get a raw audio review from Jason Powell. You get the .NET Weekly audio show where first run news is often broken. You're not going to get it anywhere else. We don't even print it on the site. It's in that audio. You got to listen, baby. You get the .NET countdown show with myself and Jake Barnett counting down the top five best and bottom three worst moments of the week. And you get the .NET Q&A audio show where Jason Powell, he goes to his sources in the business sometimes. He'll ask him some questions for you, come back with answers, report back to you. He'll also answer wrestling history questions, some hypothetical questions, and just kind of have fun speculating, like us wrestling fans do. Guys, if I've sold you, if you're sitting there going, oh my god, I got to get me some .NET membership, head on over to ProWrestling.net. There's a membership link right on that right-hand side of the page. Click that bad boy. Sign up. It just takes a few minutes. It's $5.50 a month if you take that annual option. Or you can take a six-month option that I don't know the price of, but it's more than $5.50 and less than $7.50. And it's $7.50 a month if you just want to try it out for a month. See if you like it. See how you feel about it. ProWrestling.net, your source for wrestling news and wrestling infotainment. So, Ryan, was that obnoxious enough?
Well, really quickly, I just want to say that the biggest endorsement I can give our membership is that Will... myself and Jake Barnett, we were all members before we were writers for the site.
Yeah, we've paid for this site before, and we'd probably still be doing it if we hadn't been duped by Jason into writing for the site.
So yeah, it's something that it's a product that we all believe in, and I definitely feel it's one of the best values in wrestling.
One of the best values in wrestling websites.
Yes.
Which
websites,
is,
of course.
I'm but pretty you know. Sure a luxury
no, one
expense
of the best,
anyways.
Period. There we go.
Yeah. No, it's a, it's pretty awesome. You know, skip your cup of skip like a couple cups of coffee or something. You know, skip eating out for a day. Go get you some ProWrestling.net. We fill you with knowledge instead of chicken. All right. Let's talk some major TNA news broke yesterday, Ryan. So before we get to actually talking about Impact... let's talk about this major TNA news. They're taking their 12 pay-per-view a year schedule, and they're cutting it down to four. Those four pay-per-views are going to be Genesis in January, Lockdown in March, Slammiversary in June, and Bound for Glory in October. First reaction to TNA's cutting out eight pay-per-views.
Oh, I think it's great. I absolutely think it's great.
Are you going to go on or just keep saying
yes,
it's great?
Yes, I'm going to go on.
Just checking.
No, it's that's one of their big problems has been that they don't really know how – or they haven't really effectively built towards each pay-per-view, made them feel like their own special event. I mean, how often do we hear each other saying that, oh, the pay-per-view felt like another version of Impact? I really think that this can help them. They'll have 3 months instead of just one to build towards each pay-per-view. And whenever you don't have as many pay-per-views, then they feel like bigger events. They stand out. So I, provided that they put the work into it, into each pay-per-view, the proper amount of work, then it could be a good thing. Now, if they don't, it could obviously be quite a detriment, because then you're only going to get a couple thousand buys every 3 months instead of every month.
Mm-hmm. Now, I will say something that I found really interesting about this schedule, and I think it's a great choice as well. TNA needed to do something. They said themselves, the traditional pay-per-view model is changing. It's not what it once was pay-per-view-wise. It's not just a massive cash grab that pay-per-views used to be. And monthly pay-per-views are really... I think we're going to see them phased out by both companies before, 2015, if I could make a bold prediction here. So TNA is kind of becoming the first and moving into the forefront of phasing out big pay-per-views this way. And the industry's changing in a way that people aren't paying $35, $40 a month to watch your big pay-per-views. That's just not going to happen. Now, the timing is strange to me, just in that you've got Genesis 2 months later, you've got Lockdown 3 months later, you've got Slammiversary, and then you've got like a lot of time between Slammiversary, you've got like 4 months between Slammiversary and Bound for Glory, and another 2-3 months between Bound for Glory and Genesis. It seems like in that fall region, and I know there's the holidays and football season, and it's not a great time for pay-per-view, but it seems like they're front-loading a lot of their pay-per-views at the beginning of the year, and the end of the year, I'm afraid that the time between Slammiversary and Genesis is going to really drag with only one big event to build towards.
Well, I don't think that's going to be as big of a problem, provided that they prepare for it. Now, if they do the same thing that WWE does, and they're just like, oh, the NFL season's coming up, and, then they stop trying, that's going to suck. But there are ways of making it work. Having that expansive time could really give you plenty of time. I mean, the Bound for Glory series would happen then, in that mm-hmm. slot. So, that alone, if they give it enough focus, could carry anyone through. And then, but TNA's done big night, like big Thursday shows before, so they could do that again in that time period. So it's like kind of have a almost pay per view quality show, but not have it be a pay per view just to keep people revved up. So I don't really think that's a problem very much.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That it may not be an issue. I'm just looking for holes to poke in what I think is a great idea. What do you think about the pre-taping of, specials that are going to fill that pay-per-view slot for their international commitments? Basically, they almost seem like help me with the word saying it doesn't fit into the canon, because I'm not that bright.
Chronological, maybe?
No. It involves the word canon at the beginning. Anyway, someone's going to write it in the forum and be jerks to me about it, so that's life. But pay-per-views don't necessarily fit into the canon of TNA's storytelling. They just kind of exist in a vacuum. I think that could actually be a fun thing to watch. I think they're going to be like $15 in the U.S., so, 3 hours of wrestling, $15 to watch it. I think that's pretty decent. If I'm just sitting at home going, I really want to watch some wrestling, and my huge wrestling DVD collection is not enough. So I like this move a lot from TNA. I think it gives them a little more to focus on, because there were so many times, I think when we got Jeff Hardy versus Austin Aries in a ladder match, that was a really good ladder match, but when we got that match on pay-per-view, I think it was more just like, crap, we need a pay-per-view main event. Not, we need to build towards this match and make it happen. Mm-hmm. I also... I think TNA's TV storytelling with this has to get a little more disciplined, though, because now that they have their kind of four big events, they need to build towards them expertly. Make them big blow-offs. Make them first-time-ever matches. Make them really mean more than a lot of times TNA pay-per-views, even Slammiversary, even Lockdown, even Bound for Glory. Make them mean more than they've been able to in the past. And I'm very happy to see this happening. And at the same time, I think there's a lot that TNA needs to be cautious about going forward. Not just, they can't keep producing TV the same way that they have. And that's, I think that's one of the criticisms we're going to get into of this week's Impact. Is that they, when you're building towards one of four pay-per-views instead of one of 12, your go-home show needs to be that much go-homier. Now, I will give them the pass before we start, you know, ripping into this episode or, you know, chatting about it. I want to give them the pass that when they first started building towards this pay-per-view, but they may not have had it shored up that it's going to be one of four. They may still have been building towards this as one of 12. So I will say I understand if this show isn't exactly representative of what the new four pay-per-view a year TNA model is going to be. But let's get into... Oh, go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, I definitely feel like this one is going to be a wash, this pay-per-view. And then what we'll be telling is the build towards the next, towards Lockdown.
And they've always done a pretty good job with the road to Lockdown. That's for sure. That's never been one of the dark points of TNA storytelling the way that so many other things have. The road, I think they've actually made Lockdown at times feel more special than Bound for Glory, which is their biggest show of the year. Lockdown a lot of times feels like it should be their biggest show of the year. So I'm intrigued to see where they go for Lockdown for sure, because I don't see that a ready-made built-in steel cage world championship feud. I assume that we get Aces and Eights versus someone in Lethal Lockdown, but that's pretty much all I can think of right now for Lockdown. And I honestly hope that they change the Lockdown format as well and say, screw every match in a cage, Lethal Lockdown and cage match main event. Count it. Because that would help the pay-per-view and I think help TNA storytelling-wise. Let's get into this show. Big news coming out of this show. Ryan, we're going to have ourselves a wedding!
Woo!
Bully Ray and Brooke Hogan got engaged on this show. And Bully Ray said, no, Brooke, I don't want to give you time to plan your dream wedding. I don't want to sell this to the E! Network for millions of dollars. Let's do this-ish next week in the ring on Impact Wrestling. Ryan, do you think my wife would have gone for that?
Probably not.
Yeah.
I would be surprised.
Yeah, she's a jerk. But we're going to have us a wedding. You know, that's totally going to happen. Next week on Impact, we'll get into the main event segment, you know, when we get there in the chronological go-through that we're going to rock. But what did you think of, like, when you turned off this show, when you closed the laptop and stopped covering, what did you think of this show?
I was not happy with it. I was quite disappointed, actually. We'll get into all the reasons more in depth, but my feeling as of the TNA product as a whole right now is not an extremely positive one. Mm-hmm. I do like the pay-per-views. I do like the update to the gut check that we had tonight. But as far as the top storylines go, there's very little for me there. And I think TNA has made a few mistakes that they need to get correcting by the time they get to Lockdown.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And we'll get, you know, the promoting mistakes as far as this pay-per-view are multitudinous. I think Jason said it best on Twitter, actually, when Jason said, two old guys in the ring with the number one, you know, with TNA's best heel that isn't, who coincidentally is not a heel, and one of the old guy's daughters. By Genesis!
Yeah. Like, that sums it up quite well.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's like TNA really... And I understand, one thing that I will say, too, next week is the first live Bellator show. Spike TV's put a lot of money into Bellator. Spike TV wants Bellator to be a success. They promoted it heavily. They think that the TNA and Bellator combo is going to be for them what WWE and The Ultimate Fighter were back in the day. So they want to push this hard. And on that note, I understand why we're having a wrestling wedding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, That I totally get it. And I totally get why TNA made next week's show out to be a big deal. But again, we're in a, you know, TNA is initiating this world with only four pay-per-views. And on the go-home to one of them, they made that pay-per-view seem like it was the, like, third most important thing that would happen that week.
Yeah. They really didn't. I do not feel like they sold it worth anything tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I think that comes down to the tag team match with Bobby Roode and Austin Aries versus Jeff Hardy and James Storm as well. I don't feel like that match did anything to sell the pay-per-view main event. And I was kind of frustrated by the fact that the pay-per-view main event was not the main event focus on this episode of Impact.
Yeah, I can agree with that. But at the same time, that's happened a lot on TNA and in WWE too for certain things. But whenever there's a big story involving Hulk Hogan, it tends to take precedent over the title picture. It just kind of does.
Yeah, that's kind of TNA's MO. I'll say this, they're probably paying Hulk Hogan. He's probably the most well-paid general manager in wrestling history. Like, for the person playing the GM character that is not Vince McMahon. So I understand why you would say let's put Hulk in all of these big main segments. Shall we start just going through this show and have some fun with it?
Sure.
Sweet. We got a recap of last week's show. For those of you who want to follow along with us, I'm using Chris Shore's Impact Wrestling live coverage because I don't want to steal Ryan's jokes should he want to say them himself here. Yeah, but you can find both Ryan and Chris's reports on ProWrestling.net. We got the rundown of last week's show, previously on Impact. The pyro happened. Todd Kennelly, Taz, Mike Tenay checking in on commentary. Then we had Sting's music hit. Sting came down with Sting came down with Samoa Joe and Kurt Angle and said he wants Doc at Genesis, but tonight his friends, he and his two friends, Shooter, which is Kurt Angle, and Killer, Joe, were calling them out. Joe said he was going to choke some homies out. Angle said, we're going to take off some more masks, but first he wants to know where Ken Anderson stands. So he called Anderson out. Now, this wasn't open fight night, was it?
No, yeah, they didn't advertise it as such.
Yeah, there was a lot of calling out on this show. And one of the things that I thought open fight night was going to kind of change when TNA first instituted it was that on non-open fight nights, there would be no calling out, except for very special occasions. You wouldn't get the "I'm challenging you right now" segment. It would be the, well, we're scheduled for a match tonight, so we're going to have this match, and that the action would happen around that structure on non-open fight night nights. That did not happen.
No.
Yeah. Yes.
Go ahead. Yeah. With them not having open fight night tonight, I kind of have to wonder if they're just kind of wanting that to die off and pretend like it's not there. Because they have championship Thursdays now, and the only thing that they advertised tonight was the new gut check and just kind of ran with it.
Yeah. It's the weird thing with they have like all of these different concepts that float around Impact now. You've got open fight night, you've got championship Thursday, you've got the gut check. When is it just Impact?
Very rarely anymore.
Yeah, and it's weird.
Talking about those changes of heading towards into this pay-per-view, I think Championship Thursday and Open Fight Night, I think that can go ahead and stop. If you want to continue doing the gut checks, especially if you keep the format that they started last night, I think that would be spectacular. But those gimmicks were exactly that. They're gimmicks. They're trying to bring people on to just, you know, watching random Thursday shows. Whatever. Now it's like you don't need gimmicks. You've got big shows you're building towards. Just focus on the big shows.
Exactly. I remember when they did the first ECW reunion, the Hardcore Justice thing, and they had the next Impact. They were like, well, we're taking a TNA pay-per-view away, so to keep that TNA pay-per-view on the schedule, we're going to have the whole effing show this Thursday night. I think if you do special episodes of Impact on occasion, maybe one of those per quarter as well, you know, mm-hmm. where you do your Hardcore Justice with a lot of Bound for Glory series points on the line. Because I actually liked that concept this past year. You do your Destination X type show where the X Division champion gets a title shot or gets to keep the X Division title. You know, they have to make that choice. You can make that an episode of Impact that you build to, and you can make these big quarterly things, and, you know, you look ahead in the schedules of the sports you're up against, your basketball, your baseball, your football, and you make sure that, hey, we're not going to compete with those by running this event. And you try and take advantage of a weak Thursday night. I think especially in the summer, there's a big opportunity to do that. Anderson came out. I haven't heard Anderson's entrance and, like, his theme music in a while. That, I was like, oh yeah, you have some of the least terrible theme music in TNA.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's, I don't know, it's not good, but it at least has kind of a driving beat to it that you can see why people would get excited when they hear it. Basically, we got a challenge between Angle and Anderson, and they're gonna fight later tonight.
Yeah. It was simple.
Yep.
Simple and effective, and, you know, got Sting out there for to kind of rev up the crowd, and kind of laid out the what was happening for the evening. Simple, quick, and offensive.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was fine. The announced team talked about the tag team first hour main event, and then they played a hype video for Jay Bradley, one of the tonight's gut check competitors. Fine video, you know, it introduced him really well, I thought. Then we got the camera guy talking to Brooke about her dad and Bully Ray. Brooke said she was going to have a talk with her dad and then walked away while calling Mark. Why does she keep calling Bully Ray a Mark? I mean, he's been in the wrestling business for so long. Is he like superstar Billy Graham now?
That's good. I didn't even think about that, honestly. I didn't even put that together. But yeah. You know, just the normal using wrestlers' names. I don't care for it.
I honestly just assumed his first name was actually Bully.
I think in the wrestling world, that's what it should just be. Just, you know, call him Ray, you know? But, I don't know. It's wrestling these past few years has really gotten on this high of, like, it's real, you know? It's like, it's all a shoot. Like not only is it real, like, it's not kayfabe real, but they're like, oh, we're pulling back the layers. We're showing you the truth. So it's raw and it's all, doesn't do much for me.
Yeah. No, it didn't do much for me either. It's kind of a feature of this story, and I get why they're doing it, trying to make it seem like this is beyond wrestling, and they're trying to mix the personal lives and the wrestling lives. But at the same time, if it's not actually happening, just use the wrestling names. I'm fine, you know, I'm as fine as I can be with the romance angle, but them not using the wrestling names is a strange, strange feature of it.
Yeah, you can't have an overblown story with the type of leaps that they've done with this, like where they have Hogan just being completely to where he's completely overreacting.
Mm-hmm.
And to where, like, I mean, it's like we said at the top of the hour, we're having a wedding next week after like a month of a build or something. So you can't have those types of leaps in logic and then be like, all right, now's the time to break out real names and make this feel like it's, you know, actually happening. Because it just, you know, suspension of disbelief kind of goes out the window at that point.
Yeah. We came back from commercial. We had Kenny King versus Zema Ion. And really a fine match between them. I thought that they packed a lot into it. But I also think that Kenny King versus Ion is one of those matches in the X Division that they could keep going back to and would stay entertaining. They're two guys that can work some, you know, just a really fun and unique style with each other. I enjoyed this match a lot.
Yeah, I did too. A lot of fast action. Ion hit a, like, belly-to-back pile driver at one point that just made me, like, freak out because I seriously thought he broke King's neck. I thought he, like, dropped him halfway through, but no, they did a They did a lot of fast action, a lot of hard-hitting good stuff. It's really what we kind of haven't seen from the X Division in a while. We haven't seen the X Division much, period, but just one of those crazy matches that's like bordering on spot fest, but still is an actual match.
Yeah, it's something where you go kind of step one with the X Division is letting them have matches like this. Well, step one is putting them on TV. Step two is letting them have matches like this. And step three might be giving them a little more time because this match was only 3 minutes. And, you know, King versus Ion, they can have a great 3 minute match. I'm sure they can have an even better 5 minute match. And, you know, I'm not saying give them the time that even TNA gave the X Division in the early days. It was, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes per match. But give them five. Like, give them enough time to really set up and tell a story through their match. But yeah, I thought that King and Ion did some really good stuff here. After the match, King talked to Chrissy Hemme, said that on Sunday night at Genesis, Chrissy Hemme is going to announce him as the new X Division champion. So on Sunday, just to recap for those of you, it's Kenny King versus Christian York, and the winner of that match goes on later in the night to face Rob Van Dam for the X Division championship. Let's get your prediction on that one real quick, Ryan.
Oh, I hope they just move the title. I think King needs a lot of focus. I think they can give him that now that they have so many less pay-per-views. They can really get him on the show and give him a character. And I think giving him the title would be a good thing because then you can have a bunch of babyface guys, especially like the some of the people they've brought in via the gut check. They could easily go for him, like York. He could, you know, have a baby face in chase mode, and I think that could work very well. One thing I will say about the King act that I think needs to be looked at quite quickly is his theme music.
You mean
it sounds
like
very country? Like there's a lot of country vibes coming out of that, and I don't know. It doesn't seem to fit with the character he's working. Mm-hmm. Whatsoever. Like, whenever I first heard that music, I thought someone else was coming out, and then I saw there was King, and I was like, I don't like that at all.
I don't mind his theme music so much. Because they're trying to play up the angle that he is a dancer slash wrestler, and he does legitimately work for Chippendales in Las Vegas. I'm not really bothered by the music as much as you.
Yeah, it's not like a complete deal breaker. It's just it's something that stood out to me. Normally I'm not someone who notices music as much unless it's like Rob Van Dam bad.
That's terrible music. That's the worst theme music in history.
But it is something that caught my attention. So I don't know. If anyone else kind of feels the same way, then it could turn them off a bit to his character, but it's just something that stood out to me.
Yeah. Understandable. Let's move on. Joseph Park was shown leaving OVW for the Impact Zone. Said when Hogan saw him tonight, Hogan would be seeing a wrestler, not a lawyer.
Oh, you forgot the Robbie was talking to Miss Tessmacher backstage.
Yeah. Miss Tessmacher was searching for a tag team partner. Sorry about that. Miss Tessmacher was searching for a tag team partner. Basically, she wanted to team with the winner of the bro-off, not the loser. So it was Miss Tessmacher and Robbie T that would be teaming together. E was not happy.
Yes.
Yeah. This kind of made me laugh. I won't lie. This the bro off made me laugh last week, even though it was a very silly segment, and this made me laugh as well. The Robbie T babyface turn. My only big worry is that when he becomes a big babyface force against Aces and Eights, and is not just the comedy, really tall babyface. TNA, by the way. Let's talk about this kind of before we get to gut check. They've got a lot of bigger, like muscular dudes on the roster. You've got Joseph Park slash Abyss, who isn't muscular, but he's a big dude. You've got Matt Morgan. You've got Robbie T. And then you're going to have, either Jay Bradley or Brian Cage, who both looked fairly muscular, especially Brian Cage. Man, there are a lot of just large dudes on that roster right now.
Yeah.
It's
good old wrestling.
Yeah, it's surprising because I don't know. I'm used to WWE being the company with more of, you know, where you'd expect three or four giant monsters on the roster. And they, you know, they're sitting there with, like, you know, yes, they have their Ryback, who's awesome. They're Canes, they're, you know, they're Big Shows, they're even Brodus Clay. But then you look down, you know, on the other side of the upper card, and you've got, like, Daniel Bryan and Dolph Ziggler and CM Punk at the top of the card right now, and you're like, oh, wow, they actually, that at the moment, at least, they're investing in the little guys, and I approve.
Yeah, well, you've had the WWE be, you know, Vince McMahon has been the driving force of bringing in talent for the past several decades, mm-hmm. and he has, you know, like you mentioned, he has kind of gone towards the bigger guys, mm-hmm. big muscular dudes, or just the behemoth or beastly people. So because of that, whenever you have new people coming up, it's only natural that someone is watching the product, and if they're larger themselves, they're like, hey, maybe I can do it.
And yeah.
So, a few of them have found their way into TNA.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Joseph Park leaving the Impact Zone as a wrestler, or coming to the Impact Zone as a wrestler. And then it was Jesse and Tara versus Robbie T and Miss Tessmacher with Robbie E. Jesse took a big power bomb from Robbie T for the win. Miss Tessmacher showed off her ass-based offense and made me wish we were getting, like, the serious, spunky, athletic girl instead of the rubbing her ass in people's faces girl.
Yeah, can I talk about that for a second?
Yeah.
What the hell is up with the baby faces and babyface women in both companies being like, all right, now I'm the babyface being focus of the women's division. I've got to use my ass as my main form of attack. Because that's only recent that started. And it's kind of annoying to watch. I get it, you know, trying to target the whole horny male demographic, but really, do you come to wrestling to get your rocks off? Is that why you're here? Because I would so much rather just see two women that I know can wrestle, instead of just being like, oh, I'm going to rub my butt all over you.
Yeah, it's a little strange when you get women that are really good at wrestling, and it's like, nope, their whole gig is just rubbing their butts on things. That's all they do, and they are so good at it, rubbing them butts. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of butt-based offense in the women's or knockouts or divas division at all. Then we saw, you know, the Robbie T danced post-match. He started feeling it in his fist pump and then went on from there. Funny. And they did the dirty dancing lift, which was very mm-hmm. cute. I wish the perfect call from Taz, Tanae, or Kennelly would have been, guys, she's had the time of her life tonight, and she owes it all to him. that really would have made me. That would have made
yeah,
me really
that, it was fun. It's that type of comedy, like, you can get groan-worthy comedy in wrestling so easily, and the stuff like this could very easily become that. But whenever everyone involved was having such a blast, it's infectious.
Yeah.
And you kind of get swept up. And it's like, okay, yeah, that was fun. It was, and the best part about it was that they didn't try to make it into anything. They didn't try to, like, drag it out or whatever, or make it the focus of the show. It's just,
it
like...
It was comedy that knew its place.
Quick little bit of comedy.
Mm-hmm. It was comedy that knew its place as far as, I'm on a wrestling show, let's just have some fun and get out of here. And they did just that, and it was great. Third match of the night was, and we got a Brian Cage video, same kind of thing. They were, both guys were shown walking backstage. Then we had Jay Bradley versus Brian Cage in the gut check match. This one was kind of all about Bradley. Cage got a few spots in, but Brian Cage didn't get to show how, you know, I've seen a lot of Brian Cage in PWG. I've watched him a ton. And I like this guy a lot. He's a dude who's been main eventing PWG shows with Kevin Steen. And I think it takes a special person to main event a show with Kevin Steen. Because, you know, Steen, he's great and he's charismatic. But Steen needs some help in the ring. And when you've got a dude as big as Cage in there, you kind of expect it to be a clumsy match. And this Cage is anything but clumsy in the ring. I don't think he got to show exactly what he's capable of here. At the same time, I was impressed by Jay Bradley, and more than anything else, I walked out of this going, holy crap, I like the new gut check format.
Oh, absolutely. I really like that they have two guys that are new and trying to make an, you know, trying to make an impact, if you can pardon the pun. And like you said, this match was all about Bradley, and I was perfectly all right with that because he works a very traditional heel style that I enjoyed. Like, you know, the collar and tie up and then to a shove and then collar and tie up to a slap. Simple stuff, gets under a crowd skin, and he just looked kind of like a jerk the entire match. And then his finisher, the boomstick, or the broomstick, if you look at Chris Shore.
oh, wow. What do you think this audio is for? Calling out typos and reports?
I believe I've done that now. But yes, it's a very JBL-esque clothesline, you know, like the clothesline from hell that JBL does. And I like finishers like that, where they're simple, but they look brutal, and they can be hit from nowhere. That can really take a wrestler far.
Yeah.
So I see just a lot of good things in Bradley.
And I know I'm going to get accused of being a Brian Cage mark here, and I'm okay with that. How well did Brian Cage sell that? For a dude that looks like he does, I think Brian Cage can sell pretty well as well. So...
yes, yeah, it was a great match from both men.
And the thing I like a lot about the new gut check is the fact that you don't have to worry now about putting a TNA main roster member and having them lose to a new guy that may not get a contract. That's not a concern anymore. Now you're going to have a winner and loser, and you're also asking fans at this point, pick your favorite. Who's it going to be? Would you rather see Brian Cage with a TNA contract or CJ Bradley with one? Because they said one guy gets it, one guy doesn't, and that's how this works now. Man, I really like the new gut check. I'm excited about it. I think it's going to produce some really good TV. And even it seems like what they've tried to do with those gut check judging segments is make them like the Steve Austin on Tough Enough segments in a way. They feel like that with the lighting, with, you know, the judges standing face to face with the guy. Now you've got the tell me why you deserve it and he doesn't thing that you can pull and really bring out some passion in these guys. I'm really excited about this. I think the TNA, we've criticized gut checks so much, and I couldn't be happier to see them do something to fix it. And I think this is the right move to fix it.
Yeah, I'm going to really enjoy seeing a little bit of something dynamic in those judging segments rather than the standard one guy votes yes, one guy votes no, ask his time, and then, you know, it's over. If we can get two guys like Cage and Bradley, we're obviously one's a face, one's a heel. So it's going to be interesting to see them get next to each other and just be able to show off their character. And, you know, instead of having to find something to dig out of one of the judges' past and be like, oh, this is how we're similar and this is why we should do this, or, you know, here's my sob story. We didn't have a sob story last night.
Yeah.
Really. We had a, like, you know, oh, it's kind of been difficult getting in, which is fine. He's trying to get into a big company.
Yeah.
That's expected. But it wasn't like, I've got 11 kids and I'm homeless and, you know.
Do you remember that guy? Oh my god.
I do.
Who was he, like Chris Cluey or something? Or it was something.
I don't remember
like
his
that.
Name, but I remember the story. I was just like, oh, because it was like week after week we were having sob story, sob story, sob story. And then he was like, I've got the sobbiest story of them all.
He's like, I've been to prison 6 times. I got 8 kids. I just want to be a wrestler. You were making really irresponsible life choices, sir. That was my reaction. Like, I was just like, you, sir, you have made a lot of mistakes, and this is the latest.
I just expected him at one point to be like, I have a dog that only has 3 legs. It's like, why? He just kind of kept going and going. It's like, okay, we get it. Your life is kind of sucky.
I figured he was going to ask Brother Love for his next
So that's over.
Fix.
Yay.
Like, that's where I thought it was going. Like, I really thought they were just going to go all the way, and he was going to be the most desperate person on earth. Like, just so sad. Yeah, that guy sucked. These guys did not, which is good. Thanks for not sucking, guys. Then we got a little bit of a party in the Aces and Eights clubhouse. Ain't no party like an Aces and Eights party, because an Aces and Eights party happens for exactly 2 hours every Thursday night. everyone partied with women. Anderson was angry. They kicked the girls out and went to the table. The table is where they get business done. The VP called out Mike Knox for losing his mask, because you can't lose your mask in Aces and Eights for some reason. And Knox started to answer, but the VP cut him off and said when Doc got unmasked, he earned his way back, and the VP told Knox to make it right or he's gone. You know, kind of what I expected we'd see from Aces and Eights this week. Knox has to now earn his way into the unmasked portion of the club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has to get a little bit of his honor back.
Yeah. And he did so later in the night. Yeah, that's right. I just rocked your world promotionally for you listening to this podcast continuously. Joseph Park stood in the ring. He talked about wrestling camp is hard. He then called out Hogan. More calling out, guys. Let's come on. Hogan made his entrance, congratulated Park. Park thanked Hogan and Danny Davis. Basically, Park wants to wrestle. Hogan still doesn't believe he should, but he eventually gave in and gave Park the match against D-Von. It's Joseph Park versus D-Von at the pay-per-view. Is Joseph Park versus D-Von going to be as good as Joseph Park versus Bully Ray?
No.
You know why? Because D-Von is not as good as Bully Ray.
No, he is not. I was kind of hoping whenever D-Von was revealed as like the face of Aces and Eights, that was one of the moments I was like, oh, TNA, you just keep pissing me off.
Did you whisper it in that creepy voice you just used? Because I think TNA has every right to kind of piss you off at that point when you're being a little creepy.
Creepy. Okay. Anyway, So I've never really been high on that, but I was kind of hoping that it would be a chance for D-Von to like add some wrinkles to his act and not do the same thing that he's been doing for a while, but he still feels like D-Von. He feels like D-Von wearing a, you know, biker vest now, but he's not doing anything really different. And especially not in the ring. So if they're going to rely on Abyss or Park to carry that match, I don't know if that's the greatest idea in the world. I like the Park character a lot, actually. And the biggest draw of that right now is that he kind of sucks in the ring, but every now and then he'll be like, Hulk up smash. And I don't know if... and I'm sure that's what they're going to end up doing again at the pay-per-view, but I don't know if it's going to be very enjoyable leading up to that. I don't think that D-Von being the brutal bastard attacking him and making him, you know, just kind of overpowering him stuff, I don't think he's going to be as convincing, anywhere near as convincing in that role as Bully Ray will, because Bully Ray was an excellent heel and D-Von is not.
Yeah, I don't think that people hate D-Von enough to want to see D-Von get beat up the way that they hated Bully Ray and needed to see Bully Ray get beat up. I think that they pulled off some magic there with Bully Ray and D-Von, or with Bully Ray and Joseph Park, that it's going to be hard to replicate. I was fine with this segment. I'm fine with the match happening on the Genesis pay-per-view. I almost wonder if they had to rush out of the Joseph Park is in wrestling camp story, because holy crap, we're not going to have a February pay-per-view. Gotta get there. I don't know. I think Joseph Park learning to wrestle takes away one of my favorite things about the character, and the performances that Joseph Park has, you know, that Chris Park, the guy who plays Abyss and Joseph Park, the performances that he's put on have been amazing, with his ability to act like he has no idea what the hell he's doing. It's been really, really great to see what he's been able to accomplish in that. So hopefully we see more of that from Joseph Park, and hopefully the match is entertaining. Before Hogan could leave, Brooke Hogan got on the screen and said, Dad, why you gotta not answer your cell phone? Why you gotta not return my messages? I'm going to come down to that ring. You stay there. We must do this in public. That's what I got out of it, at least.
It was very accurate there.
Yeah, they're gonna do their business, and that sounded weird. They're going to have this confrontation in public, and that brought us around to the top of the second hour, right around that point, with Brooke Hogan and Hulk Hogan in the ring. And this was Brooke basically, you know, asking her dad to reinstate Bully Ray. She said, let's find this here. She's never done anything like that in her life. She had a question, and how he answered would say a lot about their relationship. Hogan said he had been asking a lot of questions and didn't like the answers he was getting. She asked him to reinstate Bully Ray. Hogan said no. Or she asked if he was going to reinstate Mark, actually. Mark. Hogan said no and walked away. That was the segment. I think it was fine. You know, it played into the story well. I don't know that this is the best story to tell in general.
Yeah, I agree. I've not really been, I don't know. Whenever this first started, I said there's a few ways that they can take this that could make it work. And I specifically said, now if they take it in the I don't like my daughter dating period kind of side of things, then it was just going to be dumb. And that's really where they took it. They could have easily played up the age angle. They could have played up the and they flirted with this and then kind of abandoned it. The Hulk Hogan doesn't want his daughter dating a wrestler because he doesn't want that life for her. That would have been fine. Like that could have actually done something good. I still don't think that Brooke and Hulk would have the acting chops to pull something like that off, but it could have been a good story. Instead, what we're getting really isn't a good story, and I'm really not high on the fact that Bully Ray is involved in it, that he's the guy in this. And I think I would be a lot more forgiving of it if he wasn't. But he is, so it's like, it's a bit grating.
Yeah, the thing that sucks about Bully Ray being the guy in this is Bully Ray is one of the best heels in wrestling.
Yes.
Like, last year he did some off-the-charts work with Joseph Park, you know, just with Austin Aries. I thought that one of the big reasons Austin Aries is as popular as he is right now is the work he did with Bully Ray. So yeah. Bully Ray is on another level as a heel.
He was gold as a heel. Yeah. And now...
It's weird to turn him into a babyface when he's doing that great of work. Like, it just... the crowd wasn't clamoring for it. The Aces and Eights situation kind of forced their hand. And I even understood making him kind of the devil you know, teaming up with Sting at Bound for Glory. And I thought that produced a cool moment with Bully Ray coming out, painted up. But I don't know that you go full-on babyface turn with it just to put him in a romantic storyline with Brooke Hogan. Like, that's a... It's a really random thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, they could have kept him heel several different ways. Especially even after the whole helping out Sting thing, he could have easily just started holding that over everyone's head, mentioned it all the time, been an absolute ass about it. I mean, everyone knows people in life like that who once every good deed they do, they have to tell everyone about it. Like, you have to know how awesome they are for being such a cool person. And then even if they wanted to use him in this, he could have just been sleazy as hell. Like, not necessarily cartoonish Joey Ryan sleazy, but, you know, he could have been the asshole boyfriend.
Yeah,
if they really had to have him in this role. Instead, they're having him be, like, the best guy ever, trying to show off. It's like, no, I just really care about your daughter. I'm sure down the road we're going to get him turning heel again. But I do not think it was worth the face turn for that swervy swerve payoff towards the end, because he was a white hot heel, and that's hard to do. There's a bunch of ways to get someone over as a baby face. It's pretty difficult to get an entire group of people to hate someone and consistently hate them. That takes effort and time, and they're not going to get that back. At least not instantly. Again, it's going to take time. If they do turn him heel again, it's going to take time to get him back to that same level.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. I think one of the only ways that I would really support this, and I just think it'd be fun to watch in a way, if they just went full on Triple H and Stephanie McMahon with it. You know, Bully Ray, he's the guy in charge of Aces and Eights. Brooke Hogan, she was in on this all along. She's buddies with Aces and Eights as well, and that's how they got a hold of her later in the show. And that's, it was all an intricate trap where now you've got this power couple, this heel power couple against kind of the power structure in TNA. I think that gives Aces and Eights a little more gravitas. I think it gives, Bully Ray, Hulk Hogan, it kind of re-energizes everything going on around that story. And it could be really interesting. At the same time, it could also be bad. Backstage...
Yeah. If they go that route, for God's sakes, don't let Brooke talk. Just let her, do those little, that kind of shit-eating grin type of thing, and let Bully Ray handle the talking part of that. Because the difference between Stephanie and her is that Stephanie, whenever she got on the microphone and she was ripping into Vince McMahon, she was good. Brooke is not.
Yeah, I think they could both be just as attractive as evil people, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She could be perfectly good being evil.
Yeah.
And
because evil Stephanie was mighty attractive, man. The crimped hair thing she had going on. Year 2000.
I mean,
Will was
again. Like
it.
I said, if she just does the whole shit eating grin and does little bits of talking here and there, but for the most part, lets like the story fill in exposition segments. Let Bully Ray handle those. I think, yeah, that could be a way to salvage this. I still disagree with having Bully Ray be a face at all, ever, because I think they have damaged him. But that would be at least a somewhat satisfactory get out of this.
I think they could get back to that. I definitely think they could. And I don't think the damage is so bad that Bully Ray can't recover. Because, my God, he was the lazy fat dude in Team 3D, like... in WWE, then in TNA, and honestly, like, he came off as the lazy chubby guy. He didn't...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh, no, he...
You turn around and look at him now, and it blows your mind to look at him now. Look at pictures of him, and he talks about his calves. Look at his damn calves! Like, just look at the dude and go, holy crap, you are in phenomenal shape.
Yeah, after the year that Bully Ray has had, I have full faith he can get his heat back.
Yeah.
That's no problem. But that doesn't change the fact that TNA is trying to sell a pay-per-view this Sunday, and I do not feel like it is good business sense or that it's good storyline sense to have your hottest heel not be healing it up and have someone want to kick his ass. Like, that's, that will get people to buy things. That's where he shines. So I don't understand at any point, especially heading into 1 year 4. And they probably didn't know until just recently that this was going to happen. But I don't understand why you would take that card off the table and make him a face whenever he's not as good as a face as he has been as a heel. At least not drawing attention wise.
Yeah. No.
I don't understand why you would do that.
Yeah, I do agree with that, but. All I'm saying is that it's salvageable at this point. Mm-hmm. You can still probably get Bully Ray just about, if not as hot as he was before. You can get, you can make things fall into place still without it being a bad situation. Backstage, Austin Aries and Bobby Roode were bickering about their awesome new t-shirts and saying, I'm basically more of the Keystone Cops comedy between the two that I thought would end after last week. And that they'd get serious and talk about the TNA championship. But instead, no, it was, I'm going to wear my new t-shirt. Well, if you're going to wear your t-shirt, I'm going to wear mine. Well, if you're going to wear your t-shirt, I'm going to wear my cape. Well, if you're going to wear your t-shirt, or if you're going to wear your cape, I'm going to wear my robe. And so on and so forth. I thought it was funny. Like, I legitimately chuckled at what they were doing. I thought it was really entertaining. At the same time, these are the two guys challenging for the world championship on Sunday, and they were bickering about a t-shirt instead of bickering about who was going to be world champion at the end of the night.
Yeah, taken in a vacuum, it was funny. It was they did the bit well, but it certainly doesn't, scream, oh, you should buy the pay-per-view because these two guys are fighting with each other. And it's kind of been my whole problem with the final sell for this is that and I guess the lead up to it, but Jeff Hardy is the champion, is not the focus of a championship match. The entire selling point for this pay-per-view isn't even about Jeff Hardy. It's about the two heel challengers and them bickering. How does that make people buy a pay-per-view? How does that make people invest in the product? Because he's not really at risk of losing if how they presented it, because his two challengers are too busy fighting each other.
Absolutely. That's a major issue that TNA has in building up this show. And when we talk about them promoting now four pay-per-views a year, if you've got a match like this on top of one of those, you've got to make it feel like the most important match and the biggest match that TNA that you can possibly have at that moment, because you've just got four shots at this. And I think the idea, or TNA's hope, is probably if we have fewer pay-per-views, we're actually going to make more. We can make more with fewer pay-per-views because we're not flying people to Orlando. We're not, you know, you take away the capital expense and, you know, the building rent and all that. And then you also take away the money you're making. I think the hope is, well, if we were drawing 10,000 every pay-per-view for 3 months, so 30,000, hopefully we can draw 30,000 for one pay-per-view and make more money off of that. Now, whether that will actually happen remains to be seen, and I don't think it happens for Genesis. But Genesis, in a way, I think we need to look at it as the last of TNA's monthly pay-per-views, not mm-hmm. the first of TNA's, you know, for a year model.
I'd say that's fair.
Yeah, because the storytelling has been geared towards a monthly pay-per-view. Everything was geared towards it, and, you know, the more we talk about it, the more I go, it's unfair to judge TNA and say, you did wrong building up one of your four pay-per-views a year instead of, hey, guys, let's try harder next time, all right?
Again, but that is also very dependent on, because, like, we just learned about this, they are a private company. They don't have to, they didn't have the big conference calls with shareholders and stuff, so it came out of nowhere for us, but they had to have had at least somewhat of an idea. I don't think that's something that you start talking about on a Sunday and it's happening by the time you're having your Thursday show.
Yeah, absolutely. And it may have just been finalized, but in the end, they still had a pay-per-view last month.
Mm-hmm.
And they're building one this month. I think, you know, their slowed down storytelling pace really starts this coming Thursday with the Brooke and Bully Ray wedding that is sure to be brilliant. But really, like, Bully Ray leading Aces and Eights into the cage at Lockdown, I'm chill with that. Let's move on to this match now. Bobby Roode and Austin Aries versus Jeff Hardy and James Storm. One of the biggest issues I had with this match, the referee stands there and watches one of the competitors get hit by a dude not in the match, doesn't call for the bell yet, just says, I'm going to let them fight. Let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
Hangs out, and it's Brian Hebner, the dumbest referee in TNA history, doing it. Brian doesn't like me. but really, like, this is more...
Yeah, you're probably going to get another tweet.
I hope so. Of just how incompetent TNA allows the referees to look, because instead of calling for the bell, even though it's the illegal man, when a guy gets hit by someone not in the ring, they decide... He goes ahead and waits for... what was it? Aries running in, hitting Jeff Hardy with the title belt. You know, it was still a disqualification ending, but it should have come when James Storm got hit by Kazarian. Like, why wait until Austin Aries cheats too? Like, it was, I thought that this was a really, really poor, poorly executed finish, and you know, it was an entertaining match for what it was, but at the same time, this was pretty much, aside from a couple little video packages, this was pretty much all of the build that we got for the main event at Genesis.
Yeah, and once again, it was all about the two heel challengers. And at this point, if TNA has to write a story around the two heel challengers, move the title. If Jeff Hardy can't be the focus of your writing, either because you don't have anything for him at the time, or he can't, you know, he has shortcomings on the mic, and you have to, you know, kind of work around that, whatever the reason. If he's not going to be the focus of the stories involving the title that he's carrying, have someone else carry the title.
Yeah. I definitely agree. If he can't be the focus of the story. It's like, and I get that Jeff Hardy has some limitations. When you've got him as champion, you don't want, you know, I thought that the interview segments they played with Jeff Hardy, he came off really well in, because you don't want Jeff Hardy cutting the passionate promo in the ring super often, because Jeff Hardy has kind of one gear promo-wise in the ring.
Mm-hmm. But Jeff Hardy, he doesn't really have the voice for it.
Yeah, he kind of squeaks. It's weird. But Jeff Hardy backstage is awesome. Like, I like the sit-down segments with Jeff Hardy. They're my they're some of my second favorite Jeff Hardy promos in TNA, the first being his Antichrist of professional wrestling ones.
Yeah, he's a good sit-down talker. Yeah. He reminds me a lot of Brock Lesnar in that sense. Like, Brock Lesnar in the ring, it doesn't come off as like... he can be cocky, but he doesn't come off as he looks, I guess. He just doesn't have that, like, the confidence that you would expect from someone that size. Jeff Hardy, for someone that comes out in his own face paint, it has his own style, he looks like he'd be someone that's extremely comfortable with himself. He doesn't carry himself with a lot of confidence in the ring, whereas in the backstage segments, he can sit down and have a very convincing talk, and you can really, I don't know, I feel like people can connect to him almost easier whenever he's talking backstage than whenever he's out there talking in the ring, just based on how he acts.
I think that's true for a lot of wrestlers, and that the in-ring promo has become a little bit of a trope in wrestling. Yeah, you've got to be good at it, and in-ring promos fill a lot of TV time, and TV time is important, but I think a lot of guys actually come off better when they're not in the ring, but they are able to just hang out and talk to people on a one-on-one basis. That's where most wrestlers are more effective. But this match, it was what it was. I thought that it was poor promotion for the TNA Championship match at Genesis that really was an afterthought on this show. Like I said, they showed a couple video packages and Genesis commercials and stuff, but for the most part, it was a poorly promoted main event.
Yeah, I feel like the match really didn't need James Storm. I feel like if you were going to do anything, you could have had... I think Bobby Roode and Austin Aries have each faced Jeff Hardy at this point, if you wanted to have them wrestle. I don't know if they did that recently or not, but that seemed like more what they were building towards. It seemed like they were building towards the two of them wrestling, rather than, you know, being the strange bedfellows of...
They wrestled on the show between Christmas and New Year's, I believe.
Oh, like anyone saw that crap. No. I watched that and immediately forgot about it. So,
yeah,
they could have easily done it again.
They could have. I don't think you even needed them in the ring. I don't think you even needed them in a match tonight as much as they should have talked about what the title means to him. You know, you have Bobby Roode come out, say, I was the longest running champion in TNA history. I want that belt back. I was great. Austin Aries comes out, says, I ended, you know, kind of the same stuff that they've been doing, but take the comedy away and just make it super serious. And have Jeff Hardy come out and go, I challenged you both because I know I can beat you both. You think you're better than me? Let's do this on Sunday. Like
that. Yeah, that's an absolutely excellent point. They're two of TNA's, you know, top talkers. It would only make sense. And TNA loves big talking segments. You would think that it would mesh well together. And I don't know. It was a 13-minute match. It wasn't a good 13-minute match. It was way too much shtick between Bobby Roode and Austin Aries. That's basically all the match was. James Storm, from his opening bout, all he was out there to do was get attacked by Kazarian and Daniels later on in the match. And I don't know. It felt... looked and told the story much like old TNA, where it was way overbooked. They tried to cram two stories together that really have no business being in the same segment. And it all ended up being just sort of a mess that really did accomplish nothing for anyone.
And if I'm TNA, I'm a little more precious about putting Storm and Roode in the same segment or the same match.
I agree.
Like for a good year and a half, they exist in different worlds. And because I think Storm and Roode is still a money match you can go back to again, but you've got to keep them separated, as, you know, the Beastie Boys would say. That's Beastie Boys. No, that's Offspring. Duh. Oh, my God. I'm getting my 90s mixed up, guys. Yeah, as the Offspring would say, you've got to keep them separated. What a crappy band. Moving on to, you know, they ran down the Genesis card. Oh, what's your prediction for the triple threat? What do you think happens?
Well, I'm pretty sure they're going to have Jeff Hardy retain it. I hope it doesn't. I hope that I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like I said before, they don't have anything for Jeff Hardy. If they did, we wouldn't be having the two heel guys be the main focus of the story. I would like to see Aries maybe take the title back, if not Rude. Nah, I don't want Rude having it.
You know what? I actually go
I'm still not over that whole, like, almost year-long spell we had with Rude getting cheap wins. Pay-per-view after pay-per-view after pay-per-view. I think we could still use a bit of birth between that. But Aries, I don't know.
I go Bobby Roode. Absolutely. Bobby Roode? I go Bobby Roode. Here's what I would do. I go Bobby Roode wins it at this show. You have a rematch of some sort that he wins cheaply on a big episode of Impact. You know, maybe he wins via interference or he wins, you know, by leaving the ring. Something after a pretty good match. And then Lockdown, you say it's Bobby Roode versus Jeff Hardy in the steel cage. And if you want Jeff Hardy, you know, you either have Bobby Roode win it in definitive fashion, you know, making him a bigger deal as TNA champion, not getting super kicked out of the cage, dear God. But, you know, have him win it in a big way. Or you put the title back on Hardy. And you say, cool, you know, Hardy won the big blow-off cage match with Bobby Roode. And then you move on to your next TNA championship match, whatever that's going to be. But I think Bobby Roode could be a really... I think he could use the TNA title, and the TNA title feels more important with him. He feels more important with the TNA title. I think that Roode is a dude who should really be the champion right now.
Yeah, I really feel like, and Aries has pointed this out in a few promos, but I feel like they did damage to the title the minute they had Jeff Hardy win it, and he brought back that shitty-looking custom belt. And he dropped the actual TNA title on the floor. They've been mentioning that since. Like, Aries has been mentioning it. Rude has been mentioning what the title actually means to him. That was the, like, early part of this build.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like at a certain point, that type of action, it carries over into how your fans perceive the title. And it, I don't know, it just seemed, it has, Hardy's entire reign here, it just seems like he just doesn't care. It's kind of like whenever John Cena wins the WWE title nowadays, it's just, he's moved past that. Like, he's gotten big enough to where he doesn't need it anymore, and so whenever he holds it, it doesn't really seem like that big of a deal. And then this build here, with it focusing on his two challengers, and having really nothing to do with him, doesn't help that whatsoever.
Yeah, I can see that, although... I don't agree with the point that I don't think anyone in a wrestling company should say they're bigger than a championship. And that's mostly because I think
they don't get much out of having it anymore. It works completely in the back up here for a second.
Mm-hmm.
He can bring something to the title. He isn't. So there's, you know, there's
now,
not much
that,
he's doing. I mean, if Jeff Hardy holds the belt and, you know, with as big as he is, show that he cared about the title, completely different story. Then that's a great move. It's a, you know, money decision. I hate talking like that, but that is what it is. It's something that would add value to the title.
If Jeff Hardy comes out and says, you know, guys, it's my daughter, it's my wife, and it's the TNA World Championship. Those are my priorities right now. And I got one and two short up. Number three, I'm going to put it on the line. You know, this is the most, you know, other than my kid and my wife, that's the most important thing in the world to me. And if he says that and you believe him, that's, you know, I hate talking that way too, but that's money. That's not just money, but that's good wrestling storytelling. That's making the prop really important and really means something in TNA's world, which goes a long, long way. Awesome. That's fantastic. I think that if Jeff Hardy comes out and throws the title belt on the ground, that's an issue. Like, that's not the way you want to treat what should be the most important thing to the people competing for it. So
I don't even really have a problem with him using his own custom thing because, you know, that's nothing new in wrestling.
Yeah.
That's been around for a while. But just have him come out after he wins the title wearing his custom title. You know, you didn't need the moment of him dropping the belt on the ground. That didn't need to happen. And then you didn't need to have two heels pointing out very correctly what that meant.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on now. We got Mr. Anderson coming out, doing the self-introduction and everything, and I actually wasn't tired of it. Like, I'm usually pretty like, Anderson did his standard gig, but because it was his standard gig and he hasn't done it in so long, I wasn't bothered by this at all. Anderson did his entrance, Kurt Angle came out, and Angle, you know, Anderson bailed out to the floor as Angle got into the ring, and he told Anderson, "I know you're an asshole, but when did you become a bitch?" And the crowd was like, "Yeah, he said bitch!" He told Anderson to get in the ring. As Anderson continued to stall outside, boom, Mike Knox comes in and hammers Kurt Angle in the back of the neck. Wes Briscoe and Garrett Bischoff and Samoa Joe come out, and Knox joins Aces and Eights in the crowd, and they run away as the... and they kind of stand there in the crowd and act all hesitant and everything as Kurt Angle is loaded onto a stretcher and taken out because Angle has had neck issues in the past. One, I don't know that you want to bring up Kurt Angle's neck issues on the air. I think that's a little weird as far as blurring the line. But on top of that, I just didn't... I don't know. It's more Aces and Eights drama, and I'm not into it. Sting then took a mic, told D-Von to call off the troops, and he would call his off, and told D-Von to send Knox to the ring. Aces and Eights were into it, so we went to commercial, we came back, and we got Sting versus Knox. What did you think of this Aces and Eights segment?
Well, first of all, with Anderson, I believe the reason why he's so much more tolerable right now is that he's actually a heel for once. Finally, they have just, you know, and again, he could very easily go tweener down the line, but he was a tweener for so long, and then a flip-floppy babyface heel, babyface heel, babyface heel. They have him just being a straight-up, since he's been back, he's been a heel.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a very good idea. Plus, another thing I like is that every now and then, I wish he would just do this across the board, he drops the "I'm trying to be Stone Cold Steve Austin" shtick. He drops that voice, and he just talks like himself. He is very good in whenever you get him in a role where it's just him talking. Like, in the ring or out of it, whenever it's just him talking and he's kind of, you know, kind of quiet. Not necessarily like Chris Jericho, methodical, crazy quiet, but he's just sort of talks like a normal person with a little bit of a subdued voice. That is very convincing. And I think that he could do that very well. It contrasts very well with his yelling the whole Mr. Anderson thing.
Yeah.
So I see good things for Anderson, provided they stay the course that they're showing, rather than trying to be like this is what we're going to do with him for a while, swervy swerve, he's the same old dude. But getting into the actual segment, I'm tired of Aces and Eights at this point. I worried around Bound for Glory time that they were showing signs of their usual rotation with their gimmicks, that they, you know, they weren't giving them enough wins, they weren't making them appear as a threat, they're too worried about protecting current TNA talent whenever they were trying to introduce the group, etc., etc.
Well, and let's talk about that real quick, because you bring it up. Sting defeated Mike Knox in 3 minutes and 27 seconds.
Yeah, what the hell?
Well, exactly. Like, what the... You just introduced this guy unmasked last week, right? Like, he just joined the group, and then they decide, hey, let's just put Sting over him. Same thing last week when Mike Knox and D-Von lost a cage match definitively to Kurt Angle because Samoa... Or to, you know, a bloodied and beaten Kurt Angle with Samoa Joe. Like, it's... They aren't letting the Aces and Eights win, like, a single match, yet are still trying to put them over as this dominant force that's going to take down TNA.
Yeah, and not on top of that match, you had Sting entering the cage and with a bat, and he kicked every member of Aces and Eights' ass. Every single one of them. There was not someone who got a shot off on him. He just belly with the bat, and then he'd smack someone over the back with it, and so on and so forth. No one really stood up to him. He's one senior citizen with a bat, and an entire biker gang fell to him. why should we invest? It's like if they actually try to sell Lethal Lockdown, which I don't understand why they wouldn't, you know, with Aces and Eights versus the TNA roster. Who cares?
Yeah, I mean,
they're not a threat.
Doesn't one TNA guy take out every Aces and Eight anyways? Like, that's kind of the thing that we've been shown over and over by them on TV, is that one TNA guy is more than enough to take out the entire biker gang. So why care about the entire biker gang? I'm not trying to be, like, overtly negative or, like, angry about Aces and Eights here or how they've been treated, because I don't think it's a great idea to begin with, but it's become a worse idea as time has gone on because TNA isn't willing to invest any of their current talent in them. Like, they're not saying, you know what, let's have Mike Knox beat Sting right now. Because then when Mike Knox comes to the ring, we go, remember that time he beat Sting. When, you know, let's have D-Von go over Kurt Angle. Not that I even condone this, but because then when D-Von comes to the ring, he has the legitimacy of beating Kurt Angle. Let's have, you know, Doc actually beat someone. Let's have these guys beat people so they are actually important when we come, you know, when it's time to have the big match with them. They're not doing that. They refuse to do that. They refuse to put, you know, they refuse to put any heat on these guys and invest any of their current roster in putting heat on these guys. And then they wonder, why isn't this faction getting over? Why don't people care about them? Why aren't pay-per-view buy rates shooting up to see Kurt Angle get his vengeance? Because Kurt Angle gets his vengeance on a weekly basis. That's when Kurt Angle's vengeance is. That's when Sting got his vengeance on Aces and Eights on this show. Why should I buy the pay-per-view on Sunday to see Sting beat Doc in 4 minutes? Like, that there's no real reason to invest in these characters emotionally now because you know the outcome already.
It's like, what's the end game? Because eventually, you know, Aces and Eights is going to not be a thing anymore, and you've got these people hired. What are you going to do with them? Because as a group, they're getting their ass kicked. Like, Sting could take them all out on his own last week. He did it. Why, you know, how are they going to be expected to win a match after Aces and Eights? And,
yeah.
But as a more pressing issue now, it's Sting, you know, when is Sting going to be allowed to lose? He should not be having 3 minute matches over anyone right now. His babyface flame for the fans is never really going to die because he's been around too long for that. He's someone they invest in and he gets them fired up. Let him lose. Not only let him lose, let him get his ass kicked. And that will make a heel. That will get people fired up. But instead, it's just like, you know, I thought they were heading in that direction. I was so excited because, you know, Knox was overpowering him. He was being brutal. And then Sting gets him on the floor, throws him in the steel steps a couple times, toss him in the ring, signature spots, Scorpion, Death Drop, we're out of here. It's like, what? The guy that just got heat on off of hitting Kurt Angle with a hammer, which, by the way, rehashing that exact same attack doesn't work. You can't go and just repeat this every month or so and after an unmasking and expect that to still get someone heat because we've seen it before. But, you know, that's a side thing. So he just did that to get heat. And immediately you have Sting beat him, so he lost heat there. Then Sting grabs the same damn hammer he just used on Kurt Angle and Sting strikes him with it.
Exactly.
Mike Knox is irrelevant now.
No, it's true. And it's not that he was already irrelevant. He wasn't, like, and I don't want to criticize the dude too much, but he's on a major national run and he comes in worse shape than he left WWE. And I mean, you know, without his kind of signature look, like, Mike Knox doesn't look like Mike Knox. They're calling him Mike Knox on TV sometimes, you know, and he doesn't have a TNA name. Where was that? Like, I understand, you know, last week you go, that's Mike Knox. Maybe you do a segment back in the clubhouse where they say, this is his name, like they did with Doc, just so you learn who the heck he is. Because the commentators aren't calling him Mike Knox. Sting did, but the commentators are going, this guy, this beast of a man. You know, it's, you gotta come up with something there. But let's move on from here, because Sting is beating the crap out of Mike Knox with a hammer. Then Aces and Eights comes out from their weird audience entryway again, and they're dragging Brooke Hogan. D-Von at one point says, shut up, bitch, to Brooke, which got him some heat and made me think, man, wrestling hates women. Like, yeah. That's mini rant here. I watched a DGUSA DVD yesterday to review for the site, and one of the matches included Tommy Dreamer basically doing Tommy Dreamer's greatest hits of making out with two women, then pile-driving a couple women and spanking a woman and all this stuff. And I just thought, how the hell is this okay? Why does... this is, you know, when you tell people you're a wrestling fan, your worst fear is that they think you like that stuff. Like, I'm immediately like, please don't tell me that all the only wrestling you've seen is violence against women, because that's not the stuff that I watch. That's not what I... that's not what I'm okay with. That's not what I condone, you know. Sorry, just a mini rant. And this was, again, wrestling showing that it hates women. Basically, they have kidnapped Brooke Hogan. Hogan then walks onto the entry ramp and Bully Ray runs out, runs him off with his chain, hits a couple guys, gets Brooke back. Then they are kind of going to the ring. And Hogan comes out and stands on the entry ramp, and we go to commercial. So you've got one old guy, two old guys, one of the old guy's daughter, and the best heel in wrestling that is a babyface set up as we come out of the break.
Yeah. I completely understand the whole hating women thing. It's like, I mean, you know the story. Last year on Thanksgiving, I went up north and met some of my girlfriend's relatives, and they wanted to, you know, we were talking about what I do, and she brought up that I cover wrestling for this site. So they wanted to see what all that entailed. So a couple of them went into the room whenever I was covering that, and Thanksgiving Thong Thunder happened. So, yeah, I completely agree that the way women are portrayed in wrestling is outdated.
I felt like my Thanksgiving wasn't complete this year without Thanksgiving Thong Thunder.
I was so disappointed. I was so worried.
I was sad. But, I don't know if I watched the Thanksgiving Impact, actually. I may have deleted that off the DVR quickly.
But, yeah. Everything about that whole little bit just... again... it felt desperate, like, the presentation of it. Like, I know we've talked before about your idea of where this is heading, and I think, yeah, of course, that could work. But the presentation of them all holding a woman there, and she didn't even actually seem that distressed, but to them holding her there and being like, oh yeah, we've got her, so you can't do anything now, that is a move that a desperate man makes. Whenever you see a movie... an action movie or something, and you see the guy, like, grab a chick and he puts a gun to her head, that is the moment where he's about, you know, he's cornered. He's on the losing end, and he's trying to get out of that any way he can. That's the image that you gave there. And then you have Bully Ray show up, and punch, punch, he gets the girl back. And it's like, okay, so what little heat you tried to gain with that little desperate move is, again, evaporated. So it's like... aces and ace tries to gain heat, lose heat. Tries to gain heat, loses more. It didn't work for me. And then to have Hulk Hogan come out and kind of just pensively rub his beard, it's like, yeah, that didn't make me excited to see the final segment of the show whatsoever.
And that final segment of the show was Bully Ray proposing to Brooke Hogan. Basically got in the ring, said, Hulk, I didn't think I could love anything in life as much as I love wrestling, but then your daughter came into my life. Funny thing is, she was apologizing to you. Hulk just looked furious this whole time. And then Bully was like, I'm not good at this. I'm not good at these things. I'm not an emotional guy. This isn't really what I do. But, you know, Brooke, I love you. Got down on one knee. Broke out a ring. Asked her to marry him. Brooke said yes. The happy couple made out. And then they were like, hey, let's do this thing on Impact next week. And Hulk looked even more angry. And that's kind of how the show went off the air. My number one question for you. When you are suspended from a wrestling promotion, can you still use the ring for wedding purposes?
Apparently you can. Like, I'm kind of impressed that he's managed to accomplish this, because Hulk Hogan controls, you know, everything there.
He
even controls the local police force.
Yeah.
So to have him, you know, for him to be able to subvert that and be like, oh, hey, I'm going to use your ring to marry your daughter. That's impressive.
Yeah, it is. Bully Ray's a man. That dude, he's got balls. Balls till Sunday. Yeah, just... So we talked about the wedding and the engagement and everything. I think that we could... I mean, the timing's kind of weird now with a pay-per-view Sunday that was, you know, we talked about the inadequate promotion of it already. The pay-per-view Sunday, you've got a wedding on Thursday, then you've got 2 months until your next big pay-per-view. When does the big storyline development happen with Bully Ray and Brooke Hogan? Does it happen at the wedding? Does it happen... And you know that something, you know, weddings never end in marriage in wrestling. So how do you think this wedding plays out?
Well, I think the last wrestling wedding we had did end in marriage with ODB and Eric Young.
That was the last TNA wedding. The last wrestling wedding was Daniel Bryan and AJ.
Oh, did that fall? Okay.
Yep.
All right. Then, I don't know. I think they need to do it sooner rather than later just because the storytelling up to this point has been very lackluster. And it's not getting anywhere quickly. So whenever it's like I put in my coverage last night. It felt like a jumping the shark moment, but I definitely agree that it feel that they rushed to this marriage part because they needed to have something big for next week. It was a business decision. It wasn't so much a storyline, just a storytelling decision. So now that you've done that, let's just say forget the whole thing and get it. Like, get to the end game quicker so that we can get to the next phase of the story and start working that through the build towards the next pay-per-view. I think that's that would be the most prudent decision. Because drawing this out now, I don't see where there's any real value in that. I think they need to get back to having... If they're going to turn Ray heel, they need to get to that sooner rather than later so that they can start getting him back to where he was and hopefully beyond that.
Yeah, I agree. They need to get to the next chapter quickly. And I'm normally a guy who is a little more patient as far as storyline developments and getting to that next chapter, but I think that TNA is making some mistakes by not getting to that next chapter fast enough here. Because really the next chapter should have been a while ago. In reality, that next chapter should have been happening a while back. Let's talk about Genesis real quick and run down the matches we haven't already discussed. Let me bring up the TNA website. Wait for it to open. There we go. Nice work, TNA website. And Sunday, Genesis pay-per-view. Complete lineup announced. Complete. That's how it's happening. Start from the bottom. Gail Kim versus ODB versus Miss Tessmacher versus Mickie James versus Velvet Sky in a knockouts gauntlet match for the number one contendership. Who do you think becomes the number one contender to Tara's TNA knockouts championship?
Probably Mickie James.
All right. I could see Mickie James. I could also see them going with Velvet Sky. I would rather see Mickie James in that role because she's not a terrible wrestler like Velvet Sky is. Let's go with a...
Yeah. By the way, can we just talk real fast about that? Whenever she came back, I was like, "Oh, okay." You know, the whole pigeons thing. Not my cup of tea. Women in wrestling and all that jazz. But yeah. I was like, you know, the baby. She is a baby face that is loved by the crowd. I hope that she's taken some time to get better at wrestling, and then she didn't.
Yeah, she definitely did not do that.
That made me sad a bit.
That was depressing. Kenny King versus Christian York. I think we both said King to go on and win the X Division title from Rob Van Dam, in fact.
Yeah, I believe he's going to win that dirty. Win the York match dirty, and then probably maybe the RVD match dirty as well, if not, like... I could see that more being a capitalization win.
Yeah.
Like, off of the finger pointing, or he, like... like he's going up for the 5-star and he jumps on the ropes type of thing.
And I think King is a guy that you can kind of base the... We said this was EMI on, we said it with Austin Aries. King is a guy that you can base the X Division around as a heel because King is a really... King's a pretty effective heel, and with him, you know, there are so many babyface X Division dudes that you can bring in. Christopher Daniels versus Cowboy James Storm. I want to say Daniels, but I think TNA decides to put the Cowboy over because they've got high hopes for him, but... I don't think anything in the near future.
Yeah, they've very much been presenting this as like, kind of like a hold piece for Storm. Mm-hmm. Not so much giving them a lot of storyline time, but just enough to where, like, enough for justification for a match. So it definitely feels more Storm's match than Daniels.
Yeah, absolutely. Doc from the Aces and Eights versus the Icon Sting. For me, this is Sting beating Doc and getting some vengeance in the Aces and Eights. Maybe there's an attack afterwards for them to get their heat back, but I doubt it.
Yeah, I with the track record that TNA has, I don't see Sting losing here.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt Morgan and Joey Ryan versus Chavo Guerrero and Hernandez. Oh, there was a promo here on the show somewhere that we didn't cover because I didn't see it in the report or something. Matt Morgan and Joey Ryan, Chavo Guerrero and Hernandez. They got into a brawl backstage. That all happened. I think Morgan and Ryan win. That's what I'm going to go with here. I'm not even sure why I'm picking that. I think we see Morgan and Ryan capture the tag titles.
They've had more TV time than champions have, so that's usually a good sign that that's the plan. I can't say I care.
yeah,
I didn't care about Chavo and Hernandez. Well, I didn't like Chavo and Hernandez. Then I stopped caring about Chavo and Hernandez, and now I don't know. Mm-hmm. Morgan is feuding with Hulk Hogan while Hulk Hogan is feuding with, you know, is involved in another storyline. So he's just kind of sitting there in limbo, and then Joey Ryan is just there.
Yeah. Absolutely. And finally, the main event, we both picked Jeff Hardy to win, even though we've said you'd like to see Austin Aries, I would like to see Bobby Roode with the title. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think that Aries, he's a bit more of a fresh act, and I feel like he's stronger on microphone. And I'm very happy that he's done with his prep, for the most part.
Yeah, let's hope so. Like I said, to me, this feels like the last of the monthly pay-per-views. This feels like the last one that TNA will, in the build to, have felt like, oh, we have to get to this. As opposed to, okay, we can sit down and really build to it. So, I'm not looking forward much to the show. To me, it's the second most exciting wrestling show of the weekend, with PWG's DDT4. Being the first most exciting one, and I don't know what could change that perception for me, because I'm super psyched about DDT4. That's going to be a fun show. But, you know, we're going to have the coverage on the website. Jason Powell's going to have you covered with live coverage of that show. He's going to do an audio update on the show afterwards, and all of that exclusively for .NET members. So, like we said, sign up for .NET membership. I'm so used to talking to Jake. Ryan, I do that, like, once in audio when I do audio with you, Ryan. One last thing before we go. Packers and 49ers this weekend. Who you got?
Oh, absolutely the Packers.
Thank you. I live with a 49ers fan, my wife, and I've had to put up with her talking about the Niners win at the beginning of the season all week. And I'm telling her, they're two different teams right now. The 49ers are very different, and the Packers, they've evolved. They're different. I think the offense was clicking well in the first half last week. I think that there's a lot of good that we can look at, even though I do you think it was a cake win over the Vikings that I wish wouldn't have been such a easy one for the Packers? I do wish that Christian Ponder would have been 100% and good to go, so we could have beat him at 100%. No one likes to win that way.
No.
Yeah. But, go Pack. Go. Should be a very good game.
Oh, absolutely.
To me,
I definitely respect the 49ers defense. It is fun watching them do their work. I hope we beat them.
I was going to say, and we just got to hope and pray that Justin Smith is still not healthy, because that defense has looked completely different with Justin Smith out. And that's my prayer. I don't want to deal with the gloating phone calls from my wife, or the gloating from my wife, the gloating phone call I'm going to get from my brother, the gloating that I will receive from my, you know, some good friends of ours that are 49ers fans. I just don't want to deal with that crap come Saturday night. I want to be able to text each and every one of them, including my wife's grandma, who is a jerk around 49ers games, and be like, yo, grandma, check it. We just kicked your ass.
Although, if my Packers do lose this Sunday, I will take some solace in the fact that I can immediately get on Twitter and watch Will just kind of cry about all the onslaught of 49ers.
Right.
Well,
hate he's going to get.
The thing is, I'll be getting like phone calls. I'm actually on Saturday night at the DDT 4 show from PWG because I already had tickets to that. So I'm there during the second half of the game. So if they lose, man, I people will see me just like when they get that DVD, I'll be the guy in the background looking at his phone constantly like, come on, guys, stop being jerks. I'm sorry. Or if they win, I'll be the dude when time expires and I get the update on my phone just in the middle of a match that yells, Packers win! Packers win! And everyone around is like, you douche, you spoiled the football game. So, yeah, I get to be a douche this weekend. Different, I know. Thank you, Ryan, for joining me today. It's always fun when we get together. Thank you, everyone, on the all-access side of things for joining us, on the member side for joining us. Have a great weekend, and, you know, check back to .net for that pay-per-view coverage and all that. Peace out, everyone.